I can see where Hurricane Helene is. She's right now charging through Georgia, and I've seen some of the video. It's obviously at night, but some of the video of the flooding in the Atlanta area, Sandy Springs, for those of you who know it. My best friend lives north of Atlanta in Cumming, and so I've reached out to her just because I know they're dealing with a ton of rain and wind, and it's an area that just a lot of people packed into that metro. And so Helene has already done a ton of damage. The last I knew, and I'm seeing the updates every now and then on the news in front of me, but it was 1.8 million customers without power. So approaching 2 million people. It's just an enormous storm, even though it's now a Category 1, leaving a lot of damage, a lot of flooding, a lot of wind shear, even some tornadoes in its wake. So please, please be careful if you're in the path of Helene. We're happy to keep you company. We'd love to hear from you. If you're dealing with it now, want to know that you're safe. At A-Law Radio to find us here online and then also on our Facebook page. Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, there are states of emergencies all over the place. And the latest that I've heard is that there are three people who've passed away. Helene hit Florida as a Category 4 and has since been downgraded to a Category 1, but still so much water and, like I say, a lot of damage, just a large swath of this rain. I know that there'll be parts of the East Coast that are getting it, the Mid-Atlantic, that will get it as it kind of marches up. But I've also seen that it's supposed to die out. Don't ask me where. We don't have a ton of rain in our forecast in the New York City metro, but I know my brother in the D.C. area does have rain pretty much all weekend in his area. So there's going to be a lot of water, a lot of wind. So please be careful, and I hope that you'll take every precaution to protect yourself, your family, and your pets. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll get back to more of the football, getting ready for week 4. Also, huge, huge game on the college football slate between Georgia and Alabama. Since my husband is a huge college football fan, that's our date night on Saturday. Also, it was my idea because I'm running a half marathon on Saturday and I'm going to be essentially a couch potato. In fact, after running a half marathon, which is 13.1 miles, my longest training run so far is about 11 plus. It's not so much that I'm sore for days and days, usually sore for about 48 hours, but the day of the run, whether a long training run or whether the actual half, which is Saturday, I find that I can't lay down. I really can't sit in a position for very long because I get really sore after a while, uncomfortable. And I'm sure many of you who are better runners, more experienced runners than I, you understand. But yeah, not looking forward to the aftermath, but I am looking forward to the food on Saturday. I think what we're doing is, so my husband's going to bike around the park where I'm running. I think we're doing Thai food because I love Thai food as a treat, and then ice cream. We're going to get the trimmings to make ice cream sundaes. Here's the problem, though, and Percy, I'm going to get to your call here momentarily, so please hang on. I don't want to belabor the point other than to say it has gone from bad to worse with the neighbor, with his light. This spotlight that is shining in, not only shining in our backyard and lighting up our backyard as though we've got lights in our backyard, but also our master bedroom that has two windows that are getting flooded by this light. It's a tough situation. He's really stubborn. He's mad. He's refusing to do anything about the light at all now, and has said that if we bother or if we dare to ask the town to intervene, he's going to make sure that he cuts down one of the trees that is partly on his property. So it's become a kind of a blah situation there. And I'm kind of nervous about sleeping on Friday night because the light, even with blinds, curtains, a blanket that's draped over, you know, folded over the top of our curtain rod, you wait 10 minutes and you can see everything in the bedroom. It's just right now we don't have any curtains to black out. We've just got the three layers, the four layers. And I'm nervous. I'm nervous about sleeping on Friday because I think Pete, this is me, when I get nervous or anxious about something, I then don't sleep as well. And so I'm kind of nervous that I'm going to be not freaking out, but just every time I wake up and try to like turn over, I'll see the lights and it's so annoying and it's frustrating, especially since the neighbor is not at all interested in making any changes to help us out. Well, me appealing to him did not work.
Well, now it's into the town's hand. That's where you have to go get the town.
But I don't want this to turn into a pissing contest. Like, that's not what I want.
Yeah,
we don't care about you having a light on your property. We just don't want it to shine into our bedroom.
But he's making it that type of contest.
He won't consider any options. In fact, what he said to us is, he said, you had 3 days to tell me that it was bothering you and you didn't, and now I'm not moving it. I'm not doing anything, he said.
Hey, logic. Lots of logic on that one.
Yeah, I knocked on his door for a couple of days and they weren't home, so I'm not sure if those 2 days count or don't count, but yeah, it's pretty frustrating. I've never dealt with a neighbor like this before. And if someone came to me and said, your light is bothering me, you know what I'd do? I'd turn it off immediately until I figured out, you know, what else I could do. So it's not something I've dealt with. But he's an older gentleman and he is apparently stubborn. I don't know him very well. I know his wife, but she's not intervening. She's allowing him to handle it. And he pounded on our door yesterday and just, yeah, it was Not a good scene.
I have a tip for Elise today. Have some chamomile tea before you try to go to bed. Because if you have that, there could be
It'll calm me down.
The light could be on in the room, and you still will go to sleep.
Oh, all right. I'll try. I do use some essential oils. I know lavender is another big one, too. I might take drugs. But I'm nervous about if I don't. But see, the thing is, if I don't sleep with like melatonin's what I use, if I don't sleep and then I wake up exhausted, the run will just be that much worse. So that's why I'm nervous. Just, yeah. Any suggestions? I appreciate it because I'm literally at wit's end. 855-212-4227. Again, online at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. So Percy is listening in Oakland and tells producer Pete that he was at the A's game, so at the Coliseum on Wednesday. Percy, what was that experience like for you?
Hey, Amy. How you doing? I don't know if you remember me, but I want a quick update. What happened to the nest of bunnies that you had in the backyard?
Mama moved them, but we have seen a couple of see a couple of the young bunnies kind of hopping around, but she moved them out of the nest and put them back in the trees.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they're safe.
Yes.
That's good. So I also wanted to thank you, Damon Amendola, who used to be with CBS Radio, and who Bart Winkler, who just came on before you, for understanding the fans and what we've been through. But especially Damon Amendola, who actually came for one of the reverse boycotts and interviewing guys like Casey Pratt and Brody Brazil, who have really been on the ground level of what's been happening with the team, the city of Oakland, Alameda County, and even like in the environmental reports and all that stuff. They were really in on it. And it just killed me that John Fisher is still moving this team where he could have stayed in Oakland. The city had the $425 million set aside, which is much more than what he's going to get in Nevada. And the equity on the team would have been a lot higher. And the only reason he's really moving the team is he's guaranteed $100 million a year from the other owners, from the revenue sharing.
Well, and also there's a difference in terms of the taxes, but I do agree with you. I think that he wanted to move the team, and not just him, but the owners, they were bound and determined that they wanted to take advantage of a new stadium in Vegas. And so once the owners decided that they were dead set on the team staying in Oakland, it really kind of felt like a losing battle for the city, for the county, for the fans, because yeah, the owners could have said, no, we should try to work this out. Even if John Fisher didn't necessarily want to, the owners had to approve it for him to move. And once they decided, once Vegas was in, they were, it seemed like they were all about, and this happened with the NFL too. They were all about getting a team in what is right now a thriving area, and it's hip, and there's a lot of money there, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you also know the relationship between Mark Davis and John Fisher, as well as Joe Lacob. But Lacob and Fisher are kind of friends. But Davis hates John Fisher because one of the reasons the Raiders moved to Las Vegas to begin with was because Fisher and the A's controlled, I think, close to 70% of the proceeds for parking in the concession stands. Mm.
Well, also, the NFL wanted a football-only stadium, too. So that's where the NFL part of it came
right.
in. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it moved there because of help with from Jerry Jones and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But as far as the game was concerned, it was a really live atmosphere. I hadn't seen close to it. The best one I'd ever seen from memories were two. The very first game I saw way back in 1978 when Mitchell Page hit a game-winning off home run against the Blue Jays and mm-hmm. hit it towards the Bart Bridge. I don't know if you know mm-hmm. the area I'm talking about.
Yep.
And that's now part of Mount Davis. And then a little more recently, it was game five between Sonny Gray and Verlander over here at the Coliseum. Like I said, for game five, and they took off the tarps of Mount Davis, and it was probably closer to 60,000 fans cheering the game. And sadly, the A's lost that game, but man, it was crazy. We were from Bart Bridge on to the stadium. Everybody was already cheering, "Let's go Oakland!" all the way down, and man, it was rocking. It was rocking a little bit last night. But I think you could sense some of the sadness and the anger a little bit. Mm-hmm. What was going on? The treehouse was still lit, but there's just a lot of sadness going on.
Mm. Now, will you support the team as it moves?
I will not. Don Fisher and even Mark Davis. I'd rather not support the billionaires that keep moving out of Oakland, mm-hmm. although I don't mind supporting. This is my logic with the Warriors. They moved out of the area. Again, he was in the same bind as Mark Davis, that Fisher and the A's controlled the concessions and the parking fees. And so moving across the bay to San Francisco just made more sense. Mm. Plus the simple fact the Warriors were the San Francisco Warriors and to begin with. And so I was like, well, they're just moving back to where
they're moving home.
They're just moving back. And on top of it, Joe Lacob's marketing people told him, you can't change the name anymore from the Golden State Warriors to San Francisco Warriors that apparently he had wanted, because all the titles that were won under the banner of the Golden State Warriors is now kind of like a branding thing, and he couldn't remove it. And so his marketing people is basically telling him, he's stuck with the name Golden State Warriors because of all those titles and the marketing. And so Oakland's not in there, mm-hmm. but you know it's Oakland when you hear Golden State.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I can't even imagine how hard that's been for the fan base, especially for people who were following and supporting both the Raiders as well as the A's, and just feeling this sense of loss for people who rooted for them for years and years. And obviously the A's were there at the Coliseum for nearly 60 years.
Yeah.
It's like losing a family member disappear.
I've had several family functions there, several birthdays and that kind of thing. As far as myself, actually, as far as even pushing for the Howard Terminal Stadium, there was a small coalition of us in a Facebook Messenger group called the Howard Terminal Coalition, and we would actually either sit in at city council meetings or county board supervisor meetings, or we would do Zoom meetings, and we'd express our, you know, dissatisfaction of what was going on between the A's and the city and all that stuff, and we pressed that, you know, this was more than baseball kind of thing.
Yeah, it definitely is part of the fabric of a lot of cities and a lot of fan bases.
Yeah.
And to have I understand what you're saying about the Golden State Warriors. At least they're still in the area. But it's not just about the team and the fans. It's also about the people that lose jobs when these teams lose or when they leave the area. And there's going to be hundreds of people that would have been working, all of these months every year at the Oakland Coliseum, and now they're losing jobs. jobs. Not everyone is going to end up going to Sacramento, and certainly not everyone is going to end up going to Vegas. And so there's a major piece of the economics in a city when a franchise is gone or moves, and as I say, people lose jobs too. So that's all.
Yeah, I mean that, and just one more thing on that is that a friend of mine who worked for the from high school, actually, he was a high school friend. His name's Warren Chu. He worked for John Fisher and the A's for 24 years, and all of a sudden to lay him off, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, it really hurt and sucked. You know, he had his dream job, and all of a sudden the guy pulls the rug underneath him or whatever. It's just sad altogether.
Well, I appreciate your perspective. Thank you so much for calling, Percy.
All right, I mean, I'll call again another time. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Good to hear from people who were at the Oakland Coliseum. We've now had a couple of different callers. I'm seeing some posts as well online at A-Law Radio and our Facebook page about what this means. And yeah, it's worth noting that this is not just about fans who don't have their team anymore, whose stadium will be empty. Danny Vietti lives in California, works in California. He's a social media manager for CBS Sports. And I was seeing some of his interviews with fans who were there at the Coliseum, and they were talking about what a fabric of their lives Oakland A's baseball has been, because it's got a long tradition there. But also, he shares this photo, and maybe we can retweet from our show account at Amy After Hours. It's the A's head groundskeeper, and maybe people know the name Clay Wood. He was preparing the field at the Coliseum one last time on Thursday. It was his 31st and final season with the club. And Danny makes the point that there are a lot of grounds crew that will lose their jobs, people that are responsible for taking care of the stadium on off days, maybe cleaning the stadium. And there's so many different jobs, not to mention concessions and parking and all of the different industries that revolve around a stadium and a team where it operates. It's not just game days. It's the other days where the offices are busy, even if the stadium is dark. And so I think it's worth noting, yeah, it's not just about the fans. It's also about the jobs and the impact on the economy as well. Thank you. Pete has retweeted at Amy After Hours, and we appreciate that so many of you are willing to share your perspectives. I was younger growing up in New England, though, but I do remember the loss and the pain and the emotion, the frustration when the Hartford Whalers left Connecticut. Still have a T-shirt that I love, and I follow the Hartford account. They follow me too. And so when we were talking about on last night's show, different fan bases who've lost that team and that connection, but also that boost to the economy, the Hartford Whalers come to mind. That was their only Hartford. That was the only pro sports team they had. They've got some minor league teams in there, and UConn will play a lot of games in Hartford. But that was their pro sports team. And there was a big loss and a big void when the Whalers departed the city. At A-Law Radio, I understand we also have some fans. Oh my gosh, I didn't mean to say that. We also have, well, sports fans. We also have some listeners who are on the line and want to speak to me. So that's good. We'll do that after the break, but we have to get to our break. Good Friday morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us. Happy Friday morning to you. We're doing more football, a little bit of baseball in here as well, and kind of mourning the end of, nearly 60 years for the Oakland A's at the Coliseum. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Snap is back. Pressure from Lawson. He heaves it down the right side of the field. Double coverage. Tip to the ground. Was it intercepted or caught? Caught on a deflection.
Intercepted.
Oh, no, it was intercepted. Yeah. And by who? Amani Oruwariye. Of all people, Amani Oruwariye, who has had an interesting evening, comes up with a deflected interception at the 2-yard line. Oh, my goodness.
Came down there to the end. Missed a couple opportunities to advance the ball or keep drives going. But the quarterback played well. Made a lot of good decisions, throws. Couldn't get our run game going, tried a variety of runs. Give them credit, they did a good job of shutting down our run game.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
Yes, the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants kick off week four in the NFL, and it's the Cowboys who prevail. Much better run defense, much better in terms of preventing the bigger plays after a couple of big chunk plays earlier for the Giants, and also keeping the Giants from getting into the end zone. And that's what Brian Daboll talks about, missed opportunities there for the Giants because they had to settle for five field goals, could not get into the end zone, had that late interception really of a Hail Mary, but Brad Sham with the call on Cowboys Radio. Now coming up, we'll get to the defensive perspective as we look ahead to week four because defense wins championships. Our game of the week poll is up at A-Law Radio and also on our Facebook page After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Very spirited voting early on. We're glad to hear from you. 855-212-4227. I want to talk to Tony who's in Sacramento. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hi, hello.
Hi, Tony.
Oh, okay. Hello. Yeah. Hey, Amy. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
I'm a Giants fan. The A's beat us in 1989 in the earthquake World Series. There.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I talk to A's fans, they like to remind me of it. I don't have the. I'm not really. I don't really feel too sorry for them for moving away. Yeah, they are. They're pretty rude about the bragging about beating us. But anyway, your situation with the light.
Uh-huh.
You got to watch this movie called Lakeview Terrace with
Is that a horror
Jackson
movie?
And no, it's basically what you're going through. It's about neighbors that have a major dispute.
Mm.
Kerry Washington and Samuel Jackson.
Oh, gotcha.
And
okay.
So the beginning of their dispute starts with the light. Samuel Jackson is his neighbor, and he has this crazy light flash right into the bedroom, and they go to try to talk to him. Yeah, things don't work out, but yeah, go anyway. You got to watch that with your husband. That's a good one.
Wait,
and
no,
I remember
no,
I wanted
I don't,
to call back
unless it gives me a solution, it's going to depress me.
it's so familiar. It's just so similar to your situation.
Oh.
You got to watch it. It's too similar. Yeah, it's almost like almost like a double parallel there.
Oh, gotcha.
You need to watch the Warriors movie too. Remember the Warriors come out and play?
Yes.
It's about street gangs, so there's language there. There's foul language, but that's another must-watch movie for you there.
Oh, yeah. I don't think we need a street gang or anything, but my husband has briefly joked about a BB gun.
Yeah, I'm sorry, what was that? The BB gun?
Yeah, he's interested in trying a BB gun.
Oh, yeah, that sounds fun, too, yeah. Target practice there.
Yeah, right. Not
anyway,
that
that's all I have, though. Yeah, good to talk to you, though. I've been listening for a long time.
Thank you,
my
Tony.
First time calling.
Oh, appreciate it. I appreciate it so much. Thanks for listening to our show. Jason is in Tennessee. Jason, welcome to After Hours.
Yes, I want to elaborate on the light as well.
Oh, dear. Okay.
In the Bible Belt in the South, we fight back with a bigger light. So you all rent a light from a rental company and just shine it bright right back and make sure it's brighter than his.
Oh, except that how is that going to get his light to turn off, though?
He might, well, I mean, it'll drown his out, or he might get the picture, okay, I need to turn, his wife might actually talk to him and say, okay, we probably need to turn the light out, honey.
Yeah, seriously, I feel like she would be, anyone would be more reasonable than him. He is, oh gosh, he won't listen, and he got really mad and stubborn right away, and somehow blamed it on us, which I don't even know how that happened. He swears that we had on opportunity to tell him that it was too bright, and I didn't think he was going to leave that thing on all the time. I guess that's why I didn't like rush right out there and start freaking out. Didn't think that was a good plan, but I couldn't believe he was going to leave it on all the time. So yeah, I'm hoping that I can run into his wife or somehow write him a nice note, because talking is not working. The second we start talking, he just starts yelling over us. So it's like an old man get off my lawn type of thing. And so yeah, it's just it's kind of a mess. But it's interesting, though. I wonder if a light on the corner of our house would repel the light from his side.
I would just rent one and just shine it right into his bedroom. Happy wife, happy life. If she gets upset and says, hey,
that's true,
you gotta turn his light out, or else. Okay, thank you.
That's true. Thanks, Jason. Have a good weekend. Let's do one more. Brandon is in Chicago. Brandon, what do you think?
I really think that she is the key. I would suggest you bake some of your famous cookies.
Ooh,
and go over.
Okay.
Go over, and if you can catch her by herself, explain to her your situation, woman to woman. Explain that you waited 3 days because you tried to be as accommodating as possible.
Yes, I really did.
But it got to a point where it affected your health, and you probably might be embarrassed to say, but explain to her what you do in this male-dominated industry. I mean, try to get woman to woman with her and say that you want to be friends.
I like that.
You want to be friends, but he's forcing your hand to be unneighborly. Mm. And his solution is to kill a tree. I mean, if you can get through to her.
True. Good point. I like that, actually, because she's really nice. But so far, the only person that we've been able to talk to is him, because he not only does he enter the door and she's somewhere in the house, but he's been pounding on our door because he's angry that we might actually tell the town, like appeal to the town, that it's too bright, feeling like that's the last resort. So he's mad at us that we mentioned the town, and now he's coming over to bang on our door and threaten us with, I don't know what else, something about the tree. And so, yeah, maybe if I can finally get to her, that feels like a much better solution, Brandon. Thank you.
Well, I wish you all the best.
Oh, please, I appreciate that.
Keep us informed on what happened.
Thank you for being invested, Brandon. That means a lot to me. That's so nice of you guys. Many of you are suggesting some untoward kind of underhanded dealings. Like I said, potentially the BB gun. Other people are saying, why don't you take a light and shine it right into his room? I know my husband, he has said that in anger because he's upset on my behalf, but also just mad that the guy won't be reasonable. Again, if this was roles reversed, Pete, and he came over to me and said, hey, your light is way too bright. It's shining into a room. You know what I would do? Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to keep you awake. Like, I would apologize and say, what can I do? But he is so mad. And again, I don't know if it's because of the town thing. He swears that he waited 3 days and no one said anything to him, which is not true. My husband did tell him it was really, really bright, trying not to be like, hey, dude, that's obnoxious. What are you doing? Because my husband's only been there for 9 months, you know, we're trying to be nice, but I guess he wasn't, I don't want to say forceful, but he wasn't direct enough and didn't say to the man, please don't do that. It's so bright. But the thing is, we've offered to move it for him. He said it's too hard. He was up on a ladder. We've offered to move it. My husband's really handy with tools. He can build things. I mean, he's so good at this type of thing, home repairs, and would be happy to either put up, you know, some type of a bracket with a piece of metal that would direct the light elsewhere. He's even offered to move the light to the back of his house so it's not shining directly into our bedroom. And the guy's so rude right now. He just, like I said, he's banging on the door saying all kinds of nasty stuff. And I guess he's just triggered by the whole town ordinance thing.
I think Brandon and Jason had great ideas. I think they were the best ones.
And my neighbor, the woman, the wife, is so nice. We've had some really nice conversations. She loved Penny, so she was always really kind about Penny traipsing through her yard. And loves flowers. We've talked about the town a bunch, and she's been really kind. I've never had this type of an issue with her, but so far have not seen her. Like, it seems as though he told her he would take care of it, and it's
right.
Obviously become a big mess.
And
now,
then if you can't see her, go get one of those big construction lights and put it in your backyard.
Stop telling me that. No, I don't feel like that will help.
That's the ones that block off lanes. So I go put it right in my backyard.
Those are so bad.
Right in his bathroom.
Can I tell you something? It's about that bright, though. Like, you cannot look at his spotlight right now without being blinded. I mean, you get the blind spots when you look away from the light after. That's how bright it is. And that should not be legal. I just don't.
It's against the town.
I know. You're right. It is. We're hoping that's last resort.
It's time to fight now.
Okay. Pete, no.
I'll fight.
Don't you dare reach out to my husband. I feel like he's on the brink. At A-Law Radio, and please vote in the After Hours Game of the Week poll, even as I struggle with anxiety over the neighbor. And actually, while you're there, if you check out my Twix, I shared this video of Shohei Ohtani and his wife trying to get a selfie with their dog. Oh, it goes horribly wrong. It's really funny because even famous dogs squirm when the camera comes out. Penny would never let me take a selfie. The number of times times that I tried and came away with these crazy photos of the dog moving, looking around, licking the camera. She never would let me take a selfie. And apparently Decoy is not into selfies either. So check it out. It's on my Twix, A-Law Radio. And then you can take the poll on Facebook too. 855-212-4227. Did you know defense wins championships? Well, we're going to prove it to you next. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
This report is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance. We kick off with Thursday Night Football. The Cowboys led the Giants by 5 points late in the fourth quarter. The Giants had the ball.
Fourth and five. Jones flushed out, rolling to his left. Looking, rolling, running, throwing on the run to the sideline. The Giants think he caught it.
Wow.
Did he catch it? Neighbors at the 35 of Dallas. No, now another one comes in and says incomplete.
Brad Cham on Cowboys Radio. Cowboys beat the Giants 2015. For Dak Prescott, 221 yards, two touchdowns. CeeDee Lamb, seven catches, 98 yards. And a touchdown. Micah Parsons left the game in the fourth quarter with an ankle injury. He'll have an MRI on Friday. Now to baseball. We'll start in New York.
Here is the 1-1. Ground ball to short. Volpe fields, throws to first in time. Ball game over. American League Eastern Division over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
John Sterling on Yankees Radio. Yankees clinched the AL East with a 10-1 win over the Orioles. Aaron Judge with his fifth straight game with a home run, his 58th of the season. Elsewhere, Dodgers over the Padres 7-2. In 13, Marlins 8, Twins 6. The White Sox blanked the Angels 7-0. Rockies 10, Cardinals 8. Final game of the Oakland Coliseum. A's come up a winner, 3-2 over the Rangers in front of 46,889. Tigers win their fifth in a row, beat the Rays 4-3. Royals 7, Nationals 4, the Brewers over the Pirates 5-2. College football, Army beat Temple 42-14. Former NBA MVP Derrick Rose announces his retirement after a 16-year career. Golf, the USA sweeps all five matches Thursday at the opening session of the President's Cup. I'm Peter Schwartz.
You make the call, 855-212-4227. When you want to talk to us, call 855-212-4227.
Defense wins championships.
Defense wins championships.
I wanted this so bad. I dreamed this, man.
I don't know who the tackle is I'm going against, but I'm going to kill him.
No! And no!
I check all the boxes.
Late rush. He throws it down the field. Intercepted at the 30. 25-20. Micah Fitzpatrick goes into the end zone.
Defense. Defense. Defense.
That's dangerous.
Championships, and we are out to prove it as we make our way into week four of the NFL season. The Cowboys needed every bit of the win they got against the Giants on Thursday night after a short work week. Not only did they keep the Giants out of the end zone, they allowed just 26 yards rushing. And for Mike McCarthy, that's exactly what he wanted to see.
I thought those guys just really stepped up, played a lot of guys on defense, rotating through. But, yeah, I mean, you need wins like this, division wins on the road. So we overcame a lot. It's a good one to get.
Well, Micah Parsons, who later left with an injury, we'll wait for his status update on Friday. Why so much success for the Cowboys stopping the run against the New York Giants?
You know, I'm a shot at Mazi, man. Mazi was dominant, bro. I mean, I told you, Mazi just keeps just getting better and better and better. You know, I always tell him, it starts and ends with him, and I told him, I said, this is how you're going to play him. Make sure you get a massage every week. I make sure it's a nice massage day. He's like, I need it. I was like, I got you. So I said, I'm going to have a massage for you every week now.
It's all about the massage. Superstitious there. Let's make sure we don't change anything about the routine. Although the Ravens have a much more potent run game than do the Giants, you'll take it if it's only 26 yards rushing. Dexter Lawrence on the other side for the New York Giants. I don't know about moral victories. Definitely doesn't play with Dexter.
I'm not giving no petty wins. It's not. It's whoever won on the scoreboard, and that's the game. I don't give a damn about a petty win. Like it's football. We go out here to score points and to win and stop them on defense. We didn't do that, and they beat us.
Dexter Lawrence doesn't care about moral victories or petty wins. Doesn't care about winning an individual battle if it means there are no victories on the scoreboard or they come up short on the scoreboard. And yeah, the defense completely different. So Dallas definitely won the battle in the trenches, able to keep off that Giants pass rush and work the offense in a way that they were getting rid of the ball a lot more quickly. And so for that reason, the sack numbers, the quarterback hits, not the same as they had against the Cleveland Browns the week before. All right, staying in that same division now where the Eagles are looking for their third win, but they've got a tough Buccaneers defense in week number four.
We've done a good job so far, but you're only as good as your next game. So excited about the challenge. I know Jalen's really, really played well against the Blitz these last couple games, and he's worked his butt off on it. And just excited about the challenge, but we know there's going to be challenges against Todd Bowles coach defense. So, you know, again, we've done a nice job so far, but you're only as good as your next game.
The Buccaneers hosting this game in Tampa after Hurricane Helene moves through. And yeah, there's one point of emphasis for Todd Bowles on defense.
We got to tackle better. We're getting to the ball. We just got to tackle better. And we understand that as a defense, and that's one of the biggest areas we're looking for improvement in.
We have put up the After Hours Game of the Week poll. You can find it and cast your vote at Amy After Hours or on our Facebook page. So we've got a big AFC West battle, the first for the Chiefs and the Chargers this season. And of course, everyone in that division is looking at the Chiefs as the gold standard, not only trying to unseat them as division champs and as Super Bowl champs, but they have set the bar so high, and Khalil Mack knows that.
When you play against a team like that, it's a lot you can learn from hearing the communication from those guys out there and seeing the marriage between Patrick and Travis Kelce and all the guys and the old line and the way that they know each other in and out. They know the strengths and they know the weaknesses. And so it's a lot you can learn playing a team like that and preparing for a team like that. It's a great challenge in itself because it helps you understand your teammates and what we're gonna have to do in order to defeat them.
I like to hear that from Khalil Mack about the communication from Patrick Mahomes to guys like Travis Kelce. We'll talk about that next hour because Mahomes is not, quote unquote, giving up on Kelce's season just yet. So, yeah, that's a big one. Is that the After Hours Game of the Week? It's one of the options we've given you. I'll just be honest and say we did not put Jets and Broncos into the poll. However, the Broncos coming off their first win with Sean Payton and the rookie quarterback, Bo Nix. And we know that for the Jets, they want to keep this march going now. They had their long-awaited home opener with Aaron Rodgers more than a year in the making. It was a huge celebration for them going back to Thursday night a week ago. But against the Broncos, you got a game plan for Patrick Surtain.
You know, he's been doing this for a little minute. You know, every week, you know, it's a highlight. You know, even when the ball not getting thrown his way, you know, he's a lockdown cornerback for sure. So, Andy just got paid. Well deserving.
Wait, does that mean that Sauce Gardner might stand to learn a thing or two from one Patrick Surtain? Yeah, a lot of defections, a lot of guys who've been traded away or who've left Denver because of the situation they've been in, not making the playoffs, going back to Super Bowl 50 in 2015. But Patrick Surtain continues to be one of the veterans and one of the best players, if not the best player on that roster. And certainly Sauce Gardner falls into that category as well for the defense. for the New York Jets. All right, so they've got playmakers on both sides of the ball. What they've been lacking, A, is the quarterback, but certainly the leadership and the voice and the glue that will keep them together. So we'll see. Momentum is fleeting in the NFL. Really, it's fleeting in all pro sports, but definitely changes week to week in the NFL. Early in the season, it's even harder to find consistency as guys settle in. So, yes, Broncos, Jets, we'll see which defense can establish not only establish that toughness, but also control the line of scrimmage and try to limit the playmakers on either side. Speaking of playmakers, there are plenty in Bills, Ravens, Sunday Night Football. Greg Rousseau has had a great start to the season for Buffalo, but how do they limit Lamar Jackson?
Honestly, it goes back to our fundamentals. So being able to play with our hands and just not have the O-line grab on us, because you want to be able to react when he tries to get out of the pocket, so you want to be able to chase him down, but you can't chase him down if dudes are grabbing on you. So it's really all about our fundamentals at the end of the day and how we execute our rush plan. And like I said, just being able to play with separation, length, and using our hands up front.
It's a real good test for the Bills, who are still perfect, but also for the Ravens, who lost their first game at home, that against the Raiders after they had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. And yes, we saw what the Ravens did to the Cowboys defense in week three, nearly 275 yards rushing. Lamar's the reigning MVP. Now he's got Derrick Henry in the backfield, had 150 yards and a couple of touchdowns last week against the Cowboys. So that's the first and primary goal against the Ravens, is limiting Lamar, but also limiting that run game. Speaking of run game, Jonathan Taylor had a terrific performance against the Bears in week three. He had a couple of touchdowns as well as 110 yards. And this becomes the challenge of Cam Hayward and the Steelers defense.
Good contact balance, converse through a hole. I just think, he's a well-seasoned running back, understands gap schemes, and he's a three and out back.
Well, the Steelers are unbeaten as well, and the defense has really been the driving force. Well, we could go on and on about the defense for the Steelers. They, of course, would love to be able to get some offense to kind of balance things out, and Justin Fields was better in week number three. The big challenge for the Colts on the other side is, how do you keep T.J. Watt from being a wrecking ball? I mean, do you chip him on every play? Do you double team him every single time? I mean, it's crazy when you have a defensive player that's so good, so active, the energy and the havoc that he can create. You got to spend half your game plan on that side of the ball, right? On the offensive line, about figuring out ways to contain him and keep him away from your quarterback long enough for a play to unfold. Or you just hand off every single time, I guess, but that becomes one-dimensional. At A-Law Radio, what is the after-hours game of the week? We're into week four, if you can believe it. And also on our Facebook page, the Dallas Cowboys able to limit the Giants' offense. This was actually not on Daniel Jones. We'll talk about it after the top of the hour. Also, the final farewell for the Oakland A's at the Coliseum. It may be a dump of a stadium in dire need of a facelift, but it was the home for the A's for nearly 60 years. We've got a couple of more playoff spots that have been determined and locked up. And so 1 hour to go here. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.